This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch the TV version of our show on Free Speech TV weekdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. A small act by a football star has exploded in a big way in the traditional and social media and become a symbol of the ongoing struggle for racial justice in the U.S. The 49ers star Colin Kaepernick decided recently that he could no longer stand up when the national anthem was being played. He was asked to explain himself, and he did quite eloquently, saying, quote, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. To me, this is bigger than football, and it would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder." Well, I had never heard of Colin Kaepernick because I just don't follow sports. But now I'm really interested in what he had to say and how various factions are reacting to his act of protest. Joining me to help discuss it is Courtney Morris. She's an assistant professor of African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University and a correspondent for Rising Up with Sonali. Welcome to the program, Courtney.
Thank you, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, what was your reaction? It's, you know, it's not very often that athletes risk their status, risk losing endorsements, and make these very powerful political statements. However, of course, it's not new. You know, we know of people like Muhammad Ali. Were you surprised at Colin Kaepernick's statements and his position, his action?
Well, I suppose I was surprised insofar as, like you, I don't really follow national sports all that regularly. So I also was not that familiar with him. But I do think that we find ourselves in a moment where public figures like athletes, musicians, performers are increasingly joining the struggle to end police abuse and anti-black racism in the United States. And so, you know, I think that in the past few months, we've seen a number of athletes who have been doing similar kinds of protests. There was Gabby Douglas's kind of silent, very muted protest at the Olympics in Rio. There was the case of the players with the WNBA who also wore black shirts in solidarity to protest the killings of unarmed black civilians by the police. And then we've seen the speeches by people like LeBron James and Dwayne Wade and others, who've really been calling on athletes to step up and to fulfill the legacy of people like Muhammad Ali and to use their platform to speak on behalf of people who don't have as much representation or as much of a voice as people who are in the public eye, like professional athletes. So it was surprising insofar as I didn't know about this young man before this incident, but I don't think it's surprising given the moment that we're living in.
Right. And like Gabby Douglas, who simply refused to put her hand on her heart, she might have even simply forgotten to, we don't really know, but simply forgot to put her hand on her heart during the national anthem, the reaction to Colin Kaepernick has been swift and harsh. I mean, really, really harsh. I think far stronger than against Gabby Douglas, because refusing to stand up during a national anthem is interpreted as basically spitting on the face of the flag, or taking a strong stand against the entire country. What do you make of the reaction? And I suppose we shouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised by that. I mean, I think historically, if you look at the tradition of black athletes protesting in the United States, they've tended to be treated very harshly. Right now, we all celebrate Muhammad Ali because he was a great man and a great athlete, but he paid a very serious price for standing by his principles and refusing to fight in the Vietnam War and to participate in U.S. wars of aggression. So, you know, I'm not surprised that people have responded in this way. I think that in this country in particular, and it's probably true in most countries, that sports tend to be very closely aligned with nationalism. And so it's not surprising that for an athlete to refuse to participate in that act of nationalism as a form of principal protest, refusing to participate in those kinds of nationalist spectacles does raise the ire of a lot of people who are deeply invested in sports as a kind of metaphor or synonym for what it means to be an American and to be a patriotic citizen.
I think that's an excellent point that you raise, this idea that nationalism and so-called patriotism is synonymous with sports. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be if you sort of look at it objectively, but of course we accept that it is. And of course, in addition to Muhammad Ali, there was John Carlos, the Olympian who made a Black Power salute. There was Jackie Robinson, and CNN actually had a really interesting interesting article about Jackie Robinson drawing attention to a statement he made in his biography that I hadn't really heard about. Jackie Robinson once said, "I cannot stand and sing the anthem. I cannot salute the flag. I know that I'm a black man in a white world." I mean, just very much invoking the sentiment that Colin Kaepernick has invoked today. This is a long tradition, particularly by black athletes, to point out the hypocrisy of, I suppose, a country that celebrates and watching them play. Meanwhile, they can get pulled over by a cop and shot for no reason.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that black athletes have for a long time been very aware of the unique position that they occupy in the culture, where, you know, white sports fans love to watch, you know, black athletic virtuosity on the field. You know, they identify with, "I want to be like Mike, you know, I want to run like OJ, whatever." There's a whole sort of fantasy of identification with black athletes as these kind of superstars and these, you know, modern day gods. But then there's a kind of, you know, that sort of adoration and identification ends as soon as people leave the stadium or as soon as they leave the basketball court. They're not interested in understanding the experiences of black people outside of those spaces. And I think that black athletes have really understood the power that they can leverage by making use of their platform to say, "Hey, we're not just a pair of hands, you know, holding a basketball, or, you know, a pair of fast feet running down a field, but we also are dealing with all kinds of forms of inequality off the field that nobody wants to talk about." And so it's a really very powerful form of protest. And I think it's an amazing turn of events to see athletes doing this, because they're really bringing Black Lives Matter as a political movement out of, you know, off of the fringes and really bringing it into the mainstream of political discourse. So it's really a very fascinating turn of events.
So let's listen to what Colin Kaepernick himself had to say when he was asked by the media to explain why he sat down during the national anthem. Here he is talking to reporters.
"These aren't new situations. This isn't new ground. It's things that have gone on in this country for years and years and have never been addressed, and they need to be."
Colin,
will you continue to sit?
Yes, I'll continue to sit. I'm going to continue to stand with the people that are being oppressed. To me, this is something that has to change. And when there's significant change, and I feel like that flag represents what it's supposed to represent, and this country is representing people the way that it's supposed to, I'll stand.
Specifically, what would you like to say?
There's a lot of things that need to change. One specifically is police brutality. There's people being murdered unjustly and not being held accountable. Cops are getting paid leave for killing people. That's not right. That's not right by anyone's standards.
And that is Colin Kaepernick speaking to press about why he refused to stand up during the national anthem. Basically, he said he'd continue to sit until the flag represents what it's supposed to. And then when asked to point out specifically what he was talking about, he cited police brutality. Now, Courtney, this particular moment in time, first of all, I thought he was very eloquent in very clearly stating, you know, what he had a problem with. But also, it feels as though he is reflecting a public, you know, despite the kind of backlash against him, he's reflecting a shift in our public, in our culture, in the public. Do you think that he's kind of reflecting back to us what a lot of people are feeling?
I mean, I think that they're absolutely. I mean, it's been overwhelming this year just watching all of the public figures who have come out in support of the kinds of claims that Black Lives Matter is making, and their critique of state violence against black communities. I mean, you know that the times are changing when even Michael Jordan, right? the same guy, you know, Republicans buy Nikes too, right? I mean, even when Michael Jordan has to come out and say enough is enough, you know that the tide of public opinion is really shifting. And so I think that, you know, the number of people that we've seen just being gunned down by police all over the country, the impunity with which those killings happen, and the lackluster milquetoast response from the federal government, which has essentially failed to do anything really to meaningfully address this crisis, is really pushing a lot of people who perhaps ordinarily wouldn't consider themselves as people who have something to contribute to the conversation, they're realizing that they really have to do something, that they have a moral obligation to say something. And that's really what I heard coming out of Mr. Kirkpatrick's statement, that he felt like he had to say something. Morally, he was obliged to speak out on this issue.
Right. Now, some have pointed out, The Intercept had this great article that basically pointed out that the national anthem of the United States, this is an anthem that is written by somebody who, you know, basically enslaved people and enslaved Africans and African Americans, and that he even had a reference to slavery in verse 3 of the national anthem. This is the part of the national anthem that doesn't get sung, Courtney, and I had no idea that that this was the case. Let me actually read out this repugnant verse of the national anthem that says, "No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave." Wow. And so clearly this is an anthem that has been sort of sanitized and whose background we've forgotten. I mean, after this, Sean King, the writer for New York Daily News, said once he read this, he's never standing up for the anthem again. What do you think?
I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, I'm a professor of African American studies, and even I am astounded on a daily basis about the things that I learn about the country that I live in. And, you know, I did know that Francis Scott Key was a slaveholder. I did not realize this missing third stanza of the song that most of us never learn. We never get past the first one. And it's, you know, it was a stanza that was essentially about celebrating the deaths of enslaved African Americans who joined with the British, who promised them freedom if they agreed to fight against the United States, against the United States military. And so, you know, there's just so many layers and layers of the complexities of anti-Black racism in this country. I don't think that at the moment in which he decided not to stand up for the anthem, that's necessarily what Colin had in mind. But certainly, you know, it's not surprising to find out that even in the most sort of mundane celebrations and practices of nationalism, we can find patterns of anti-Black racism because it's so much a part of the fabric of our society.
Right. Now, I want to play another clip of Colin Kaepernick speaking to the media. He was asked whether his action was anti-military, you know, because the flag and the anthem is also seen as synonymous with the U.S. military, and this is what he had to say.
So many people see the flag as kind of a symbol of military. How do you view it, and what do you say to those people?
You know, I have great respect for men and women that have fought for this country. I have family, I have friends that have gone and fought for this country. And they fight for freedom. They fight for the people, they fight for liberty and justice for everyone. And that's not happening. I mean, people are dying in vain because this country isn't holding their end of the bargain up as far as, you know, giving freedom and justice and liberty to everybody. It's something that's not happening. And I've seen videos, I've seen circumstances where men and women that have been in the military have come back and been treated unjustly by the country they fought for and have been murdered by the country they fought for.
And Colin Kaepernick speaking once more to the media after he refused to stand up for the national anthem. Courtney, there were a couple of things there that he said, one of which I took issue with and the other of which I didn't. The first thing that he said that I took issue with was they, meaning the military, members of the military, fight for our freedom and they fight for liberty and justice for everyone. You know, Colin Kaepernick seems to have really been educated by the Black Lives Matter movement, but it seems like the anti-war movement hasn't done a good enough job of pointing out the realities of the military. But then he pointed out that veterans coming home get horribly mistreated, and he was taken to task for this as well. What do you make of this last clip of what he said?
Well, you know, well, I think that he was trying to make an important point, which I agree with, which is, you know, the ways that that patriotism gets mobilized as a kind of a smokescreen anytime somebody tries to make a critique of, you know, the abuse of power in this country. And I think, you know, certainly there's much, I'm sure that he will continue to grow in his political education and perhaps become more critical and develop the kind of, you know, anti-imperialist sensibilities that we would have expected from someone like Muhammad Ali, you know, in the 1960s and the 1970s. But I do think that his point about the ways that people get treated, that people of color get treated in this country, are absolutely right. And I know from firsthand experience, as someone who was raised by soldiers, that Black men and women who serve in the armed forces get treated one way when they're in uniform, and they get treated another way when they're out of uniform. And that, I think, is an experience that a lot of people, certainly Black people who tend to serve disproportionately in the armed forces, something like a third of the Army is composed of Black men and women who serve in the enlisted. So we have a really good sense of what it means to serve this country, to love this country, and then to come home and find out that your country doesn't love you.
Now, finally, let's talk about the right-wing reactions to Colin Kaepernick's action. You know, it's so interesting to see people talk about the freedoms that we have in this country, and yet when people who disagree with the things in this country use that freedom, they are shot down. Twitter, right-wing Twitter, had a horrible response to Colin Kaepernick, although Black Twitter responded with almost overwhelming favorability. And then Donald Trump, of course, particularly as a symbol of the kind of right-wing bigotry we see in this country, simply said, maybe Colin Kaepernick should find a country that works better for him. What do you make of these kinds of reactionary responses to his stand?
You know, I mean, at that point, Donald Trump might as well have just said, why don't you just go back to Africa? I mean, the sort of the subtext of that statement is, it's not even subtext. It's so obvious, it's painful. And I think it really speaks to how Donald Trump in particular has just unleashed, you know, sort of opened the floodgates of, sort of white resentment and bitterness and explicitly racist political discourse in this country. It's shocking the things that people feel empowered to say. But again, you know, back to your original question, I do think that what we see here is that there is an expectation that, yes, you have rights that are given to you by the Constitution. Yes, you should exercise your constitutional rights, but you only should exercise them in the ways that we see fit. Right? You should only exercise them as long as you're not rocking the boat, as long as you're not speaking truth to power, as long as you're not making white people uncomfortable. And the minute that you do that and you cross that line, then all of a sudden, not only does your right to exercise those freedoms become suspect, but your very legitimacy as a citizen becomes suspect. And that's really what I think is happening. That's what I think we see happening in the kind of conservative backlash to Mr. Kaepernick's statements.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of them basically saying, well, what about the fact that you earn millions of dollars, as if somehow that means that he should shut up? Or this is just not the right way to protest, as if maybe if he wrote a letter to the editor, it would be a more, sort of well-behaved way to use his freedom of speech rather than making such a bold stance. But of course, we wouldn't be talking about Colin Kaepernick had he not had his stand not been so bold, a simple act of simply sitting down through the national anthem. It's quite amazing. Any last thoughts, Courtney?
I would just say that anybody who tells him that he should have no reason to protest because he has millions of dollars is revealing their own moral bankruptcy. You shouldn't have to experience wrongdoing firsthand to know that people's rights are being violated and that it's morally wrong. And I think it's actually, it's a testament to his own deep sense of moral responsibility to the country that Mr. Kaepernick stood up and spoke out on something, even though it's not something that he might experience on a daily basis. We could all learn a lot from him.
He might actually be experiencing, people of color experience microaggressions constantly. We don't actually know. Maybe Colin Kaepernick has been pulled over by the police. We don't really know what his backstory is, I think. Courtney, always a pleasure to have you on. I'm sure we'll have you back on again in the future. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Sonali. See you later.
Courtney Morris is an assistant professor of African American and Women's Studies at Penn State University. She's also a correspondent for Rising Up. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.